For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to WEI Football Sunday. It's Megan Annalini, joined by Chris Schein. Christian Arcan has the day off, but you know who doesn't? My good friend Tommy Curran from NBC Sports Boston. Let's bring him on right now. Tom, how are we doing today? How are you feeling about Drake May starting this game and being able to protect himself, I guess, first and foremost, as he's coming off of a head injury from last Sunday?
Well, first and foremost, I'm really happy you brought me in with a little bit of ELO, the Electric Light Orchestra. Always put a smile on my face.
Great call.
Good energy. Nice job, Jacob, producer.
Thanks, Jake. I feel as if that was a decision. I think that there's going to be a lot of conversation today as to, you know, should Drake May be out there? Are they rushing him back? Should they take their time? And I feel that the way the NFL has put its protocols in, it's out of the hands of anyone who has a conflict of interest. There's an independent person who clears the player. So when Drake May is out there, I would like to see the Patriots compete as if he is cleared to play. And there was conversation this week about with Alex Van Pelt saying that, you know, he wants to be protective of May and not have him run much. And I get it on the face of it, but I also think that there's a sentiment here of bubble wrapping May. The development of May has been very protected, and it's worked out well. He's, you know, further along than I imagined that he would be. But I do think the Patriots need to show more urgency and aggression this year because they've been a little bit ambiguous with their messaging. They have nine games left. Go win the games. Don't, you know, dabble around in, you know, ambiguity as to, well, we're going to do this, we might not do that. Do what you have to win the games.
So, Tom, if you believe they need to be a little bit more aggressive, do you believe that they're actually going to be buyers at the trade down line a little bit and not just sellers?
That's a good question relative to what I was saying. I'm saying more be aggressive in winning games.
Okay.
I don't think that they would be buyers. I really don't think that they would be buyers. You know, I just was reading a report from The Athletic's Diana Rossini. She said San Francisco has, you know, made contact with the Patriots, and they are talking about Godshaw, Thornton, Bourne, and actually Kyle Duggar as well.
Oh.
So he is said to be, by Diana Rossini from The Athletic, a player that the Patriots would consider moving, which is eye-opening. So the aggression I'm talking about, Scheim, is on the field, winning games. No more foundational, no more culture. Whatever it takes to win games, go win them.
When you say that the report from Diana Rossini having Kyle Duggar included in there is eye-opening, what do you mean by that?
Well, they just signed him to that big new contract.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fairly expensive one for a guy who's never been to a Pro Bowl. But he is a staple of the defense. He's 28, I believe. Peppers, we don't know if he's ever going to play for the Patriots again at this juncture. You want to be strong up the middle of your defense. You want to be strong at safety. You want to be strong at the inside linebackers. You want to be strong over the nose of your defensive tackles. You really need that, and the Patriots right now are not that, especially in the back end. So you're going to go from having one of what I thought was the best, one of the best safety tandems in the NFL with Peppers and Duggar, to perhaps entertaining the idea that you would have Marte Mapu, Jalen Hawkins, and Del Pettis. Who actually, the three of them didn't do bad last week. So, but it's a very small sample size.
You're talking yourself into it a little bit now, live on air.
Yeah.
So, Tom, you talk about that defense. It felt like they improved a little bit last week against the Jets. Do you expect continued improvement this week against the Titans team where you draw Mason Rudolph and Tony Pollard? It seems like he's going to play this week. Or did you just catch the Jets in their dumpster fire mode at the right time and this defense is still not quite as improved as you had hoped?
It's improving. It's not as certainly not as improved as I hoped. I didn't think that they would. I mean, they generate virtually zero pressure, Shad, which is, you know, as you look at this team and the needs that it has that are obvious, offensive tackle, wide receiver, now places like safety, if they move Duggar, and edge, and a complimentary corner on the other side who's not going to get picked on the way Marcus Jones does by bigger receivers, those are all places that they have to add as well. So I do think the defense has improved, and I think that generally speaking, for teams, they hit a rock bottom, which I think the Patriots did during that stretch of games where they were allowing about 180 yards a game on the ground. And then they fix it. They figure out what they want to do schematically, and they do improve. So I would imagine they're going to look, knock on wood, if you're a Patriots fan, good today against Tennessee.
So you mentioned the pressure. Do you think that'll just naturally get better with a guy like Christian Barmore eventually coming back into the lineup? Or is this just something that even when he does come back is still going to be an issue, do you think?
I think it's going to improve it because he's a guy who commands too. He's just so massive and he's so strong and he so demands attention that you're going to have that trickle down effect from everywhere. I mean, part of the reason Josh Uche in 2022 was able to have 11 sacks was because of guys like Judon on the other side or because of Barmore in the interior, and you couldn't pay attention to Uche and he'd just be one-on-one and cruise past people. So it does help. As you know, and as Bill Belichick told us for 20-odd years, the guy who gets the sack isn't always the guy who creates the sack, because usually it's somebody's moving into a spot, meaning the quarterback is moving into a spot because he got pressured someplace else.
Tom, you and Phil had this brief conversation on your podcast that I loved, where you were talking about Alex Van Pelt's offense has been heavily scrutinized, as the numbers show perhaps it should be, through this season with him as the play caller. But some of the issue might be from the spacing from the wide receivers and the way that the execution from the players is actually maybe failing on the field a little bit. Do you have any kind of sense of which side of that is the stronger problem, the bigger problem? Are we being too tough on Alex Van Pelt? Are the wide receivers maybe not executing exactly as they should, aside from dropping passes, but actually the way that they run routes?
Well, I do think the more people who say it who are expert at evaluating it, and I'll talk to Brian Hoyer, and we hear guys like Dan Orlovsky talk about it. JT O'Sullivan has talked about it. Kurt Warner talked about it with Phil. It's kind of a primitive offense. There's not a lot going on in terms of motion. There's a lot of sit-down routes. There's a lot of simple concepts, and they don't expand on it. But the interesting thing is, even with these simple concepts, you do find occasions when receivers were basically on top of each other, and nobody calls for that. And that's something that Kurt Warner had mentioned. So I think that you can only go as fast as your slowest learner if you're a teacher sometimes. And if they're not getting the primitive stuff, that's a problem. So I don't know whether that goes to coaching or the players that they're bringing in. But if you're going to run an offense that requires precision, then you have to get guys who can be precise. Same way Matt Groh said a couple of years ago, if you want to be a faster team, you have to draft fast guys. Well, the fast guy needs to know where he's going, too. He was speaking about Tyquan Thornton at the time. So they won last week. They've won twice. They're still a mess. It's just a knee-buckling mess when you think of just the number of things that they have to do. And that's what I was talking about, too, on that pod, Meg. We were having a discussion as to whether or not this Patriots season has been fun or interesting to cover. And it is interesting, but it's also frustrating, too, because you can never find out what the diagnosis is for the patient, because there's symptoms everywhere, and you can't find the root cause.
It's like an episode of House. It's not easy. Tom, you talked about the receivers. Jerod Mayo made comments this week about a guy like Javon Baker. Do you expect to see him at all today or get anything from him this week?
Well, just in terms of the way Mayo discussed him, I would not be surprised if something came from him. But I would like to see Jalen Polk just get the ball. And I think I said this to you, Mego, before. Just throw the ball to him incessantly. Target him, give him some easy catches, get his confidence back up, and make sure that he returns to being the player that he was in late August before he grew hands like feet. So, to me, I would pound the ball to Jalen Polk. Javon Baker has been such a non-contributor, so I can't really bet on that being a thing today, Shine.
Sure.
Final question, Tom. Prediction for today's game.
Oh, that's not a question. That's a demand.
Okay, final demand.
That's a request.
Yeah.
It's going to be Patriots 21, Titans 19. Okay. Yeah, Titans.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Weirdo Titans. All right, but a Patriots win. Yeah. Hey, I actually have one more question, Tom. Shime says that back-to-back wins is a winning streak. Do you buy that?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
You guys, low standards. The standards have dropped around here so
rapidly.
I
appreciate you, Tom. Thank you.
You're welcome, Shine. Sorry, my girlfriend.
Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, thank you so much for joining us. He joins us multiple times a week, both with the afternoon show.
And Jones and Keefe.
The WEEI afternoon show.
Correct.
And Jones and Keefe, and he joins us every Sunday at 11 a.m. ahead of Patriots kickoff. When we come back, hopefully we'll get some news on the inactives and maybe get a little bit of a look at whether Javon Baker will be in the lineup today and whether Jalen Polk will be in there. It's going to be like a little maybe crowded in that wide receiver room in terms of who's going to take the field. But first,
for the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Trending. WEEI's Football Sunday Show. Megan Adelini here with Chris Shime. Just heard from Tommy Curran. We wrapped up that conversation. Asking about the state of the Patriots wide receivers, Javon Baker. Whether we're going to get to see a little bit of him today. The latest from Mark Daniels of MassLive, who's down in Nashville, says the Patriots wide receiver is warming up. This is from just a couple minutes ago. Javon Baker, Kayshon Booty, DeMario Douglas, Kendrick Bourne, Jalen Polk.
Okay.
How's that sound to you? You like that lineup? Anybody missing? Anybody that you want to see?
I don't think so. I think that's everybody I want.
Yeah.
Right?
The only person in that group that I'd be worried about being the odd man out would be Kendrick Bourne, because he was mentioned in that Diana Russini athletic report.
Possible trades. That's exactly what happened to Boucher last week.
Exactly. Mm. But I do look at that and go, I know Albert Breer talked about Tyquan Thornton, KJ Osborne being possible trade pieces.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what returns you're getting for those trade pieces.
You
being
can cut KJ Osborne for all I care at this point. I want nothing to do with KJ Osborne.
Oh, but you feel more strongly about Tyquan Thornton.
Yeah, honestly, like at least with Drake May, like Tyquan Thornton, hey, just run down there, maybe Drake will find you. Like at least he's like has
how
some
many
value.
Times has it happened, Chime?
It hasn't. But it doesn't mean it couldn't. KJ Osborne just stinks. Like, there's just no doubt in my mind. KJ Osborne's just straight up bad. I think Tyquan Thornton's also bad too, but at least Tyquan Thornton's fast. KJ Osborne offers nothing.
Okay, so does this little warm up, I mean, does it make you any more confident that we'll see Javon Baker? And what is your curiosity level with having him out there? Because I do say, like, for me, what jumps out to me about Javon Baker is not the stupid Instagram Live video or the comment that he made when he was drafted. It's, I believe it was Jerod Mayo earlier in the season when asked about Javon Baker. He said something along the lines of, he's got to know where to line up.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, good.
That's not
all
good.
Right. This is a real project over here.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a reason that even the Giants, I think it was, had him on their draft board and had him as like, just like, he was the only person color-coded the way he was because there was like attitude issues and they weren't sure about his on-field acumen.
Is that what we determined? Because he was coded like yellow or something.
He was the only player with that code.
Or like purple or some color that nobody else on the entire draft board was.
I think it was the cautionary label. Like, don't even think about this guy. But when you saw him in the preseason, like, there was opportunities for him to make plays. Drake May hit him on that ball down the seam, which was absolutely beautiful. He just didn't catch it. And so...
Yeah, it's kind of important for these receivers.
A big deal.
Something they're figuring out still.
Luckily, he's not alone. It's still the entire core. But I would like to see something, right? I want to at least give him a shot. You haven't gotten anything out of anybody else, especially KJ Osborne, Tyquan Thornton. why not give Javon Baker a shot? He's a rookie. At least give him an opportunity. If he makes the most of his opportunity, okay, give him a couple more. But if he doesn't, all right, you're the way of the dodo and you're gone. And that's kind of the way it should be. Just like with Kayshon Booty, right? Last year, got put in Bill's doghouse because he couldn't get a second foot in bounds, which I think is stupid. And then this year, made a couple catches. It's like, okay, all right, now let's give him some more opportunities. And I think you're starting to see him come along as well.
But that's also, look, if we're going to make comparisons between Javon Baker and Kayshon Booty, a huge part of why Kayshon Booty has gotten those opportunities has been the complete evolution of his work ethic.
Sure. And I also think that one of the underrated things is he's not afraid to block in the run game. I think you've seen it quite a few times. One time in particular
last
week.
Now you're starting to sound like Bill Belichick.
Hey, look, it matters to NFL coaches. That stuff matters to coaches, especially like it's been a huge thing for Kyle Shanahan, right? If you're a receiver who doesn't like to block, you're never going to make it in a Shanahan offense just because of the nature of the thing. And that's the same way with Sean McVay. Like, Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp are two of the best blocking wide receivers in football. And so I think that's one of the big things Kayshon Booty has been good at this year, is he's been very good at blocking in the run game. And so, like, all right, you're willing to grind it out in plays that have nothing to do with you. Let's give you an opportunity in plays that do have something to do with you.
We're going
to
keep an eye on your Patriots inactives and who else is warming up. Seeing some nice photos of Drake May out there, long sleeve t-shirts, shorts, looking strong, looking healthy, looking
love
happy,
that.
Chucking the ball.
My
but
guy.
First, let's go to Jay in North Carolina. He wants to jump on about the Patriots. Jay, you're on.
Hey, guys, the Lunch Pail Crew working on a Sunday. You're tough dudes. Way to go.
Hell yeah, I'm a tough dude.
I do that. So you corrected me. You got me on that one. But anyways, if the Patriots win this game, is it safe to say it's a dynasty? No, never mind. I'll strike that. Anyway, but I'm hoping that the Tennessee Titans don't show are unaware that it's daylight savings time, and maybe they won't show up, but I want to see Drake May open it up. I want to see Gerard Mayo let Drake May open it up and let him show his full potential. But it all comes down to the offensive line, guys. It all comes down to the offensive line.
Thank you, Mark. This makes me think of something that we just talked to Tommy Kern about, where he said the frustrating aspect of covering this team so far this year, and I feel very much the same way, is it's kind of hard to keep your focus on any one given problem and say, oh, here's how they're developing through this. Here's how they're growing through it. Because all of a sudden, week by week, another nasty problem rears its head on the other side.
It's the classic comedy skit of a dude in a boat. One hole opens up, plugs his finger in it, another hole opens
whack-a-mole. Up. Or whack-a-mole.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we start out the season, really the last 2 years, talking about the offensive line and all the issues that you have there. Now, over the last 2 weeks, and part of it is because they've done it to themselves with the quotes that they give, it's all about the wide receivers.
Yeah.
When somebody like Jay says, hey, Alex Van Pelt, open up the playbook, open it up for Drake May, let Drake cook, however you want to say it. Well, what about the wide receivers executing on the other side?
They
Drake has dropped it in the bucket a couple of times, and it's not just one guy who you can pick on in this situation.
I mean, you just look at last week in particular. An absolute dime of a throw to Tyquan Thornton down the sideline.
Had to have it dropped. Right between the numbers.
The play right after his concussion, an absolute missile over the middle to Kayshon Booty, to the point where, and this is one of the things that goes underrated, it would have been a hospital ball from like 90% of the quarterback in football, but he threw it in a way that Kayshon Booty was able to catch it and go to the ground and avoid all contact, and Booty just dropped it. It hit him in the chest and he dropped it, and it would have been a first down. Chains would have been moving. Like, that's the issue, right? Is it's like, yeah, you can let Drake cook, but if guys aren't catching the football, he can only do so much, which is why I continue to expect big days from guys like Hunter Henry and Pop Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
They've been the only two guys who have shown on a consistent basis when they're open, they catch the football. And even when Hunter Henry is covered a little bit, he has won some contested catches. And so I think those are the guys that Drake is going to have to rely on. And as much as Tom and I may want them to pepper Jalen Polk with targets, I'm not convinced that that'll happen.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Jalen Polk. Obviously, he was
been
in concussion protocol himself, so I haven't seen him in the locker room very much recently. I did talk to Kendrick Bourne the other day about the drops and that plagued the group overall. He said it's just as simple as not seeing the ball all the way through. That's something for him personally that he feels like they're too focused on seeing where the defender is coming at them and not actually just seeing through the pass. And it's like these simple fundamental things that I think when you're asking for guys like Kayshon Booty and Jalen Polk and probably Javon Baker to go out there and they're in this big spot where they get a ball, it's the experience. And I think we take for granted a little bit because, as you said earlier, Shime, there's never going to be another bad wide receiver class ever in the NFL. But that doesn't mean that everybody comes in completely NFL ready like a Jamar Chase.
Correct. 100% right. And I also look at it, too, is I think the first few weeks of the season with Jacoby Brissett were detrimental to these receivers in that they weren't getting the reps basic in game. They weren't getting live reps in game.
Very, very true.
And I think when they were, Jacoby Brissett, like I just mentioned with Drake May, like, Jacoby Brissett's not the best at avoiding hospital balls and avoiding those balls that where the defender is going to line you up and tee you up. And so I don't think that they're necessarily prepared for a quarterback to put them in a position to succeed and get yards after the catch. And so I think they need to be more cognizant of that. Like, oh, I can just trust my guy throwing the football. I catch the ball and see this through, and then maybe I might even be able to get a few yards after the catch. I'm not going to get crushed by a safety coming in behind me that I can't see.
You mentioned Hunter Henry and DeMario Douglas. I think you can write them down in pen as both being guys who would like to keep around for a while to develop Drake May. Mm-hmm. Do you see anybody else, especially in that group of wide receivers who reportedly were just warming up in Nashville, do you see anybody else who you're bullish on for the future?
I want to see more from Kayshon Booty. If there's a guy who can kind of emerge from this group, it seems like Booty's the guy. Big play down the field. Again, he's not willing to get down and dirty in the run game. And I'm curious to see what kind of impact he could have in the short and intermediate game, because we've really only seen the passes down the field, the 33-yard pass down the sideline, the 50-yard touchdown pass, that stuff. So I would like to see more from Booty. But the inactives are out, Megan.
Oh, boy. All right, who do we got?
We have the Patriots inactives. Number one on the list, KJ Osborne, Tyquan Thornton, Joe Milton, Kyle Duggar, and then Eric Johnson. That's
it. Oh, boy.
So two receivers, KJ Osborne, Tyquan Thornton, both of those names that have floated around as possible trade targets for other teams. That's why they're not in warmups. And then Kyle Duggar is the other
big one. Kyle Duggar's the real mystery because he's been dealing with injuries.
Yes.
And so it
And then
could
Tom also brought up the Diana Russini article where apparently the 49ers are calling about Kyle Duggar. So it could be a little bit of both, or it could just be the injuries.
So there's a lot of different ways that I could read this. Like, on the one hand, I mostly feel the same as you, Shime, about KJ Osborne. And I feel a little bit more strongly that if you can move on Tyquan Thornton for a bag of footballs, then
Please do. Should
do it. It's just not working here, and I don't see how he ever turns it around here. KJ Osborne is somebody who I really like talking to. It just, they brought him in hoping that he was going to be this veteran presence to steady the wide receiver group, and if that was the only goal for him, it hasn't been working.
No, it has not.
Because it really went off the rails for about 2 weeks there, and they still haven't completely figured it out on the field. The Kyle Duggar one is the one that, like, really gets my antenna up because, again, because of the contract that he got before the season started, because of the situation with Jabril Peppers off the field at that safety position, I'm just very surprised, unless there was some kind of really great return that they would get back from somebody like the Niners, why he would even be in the trade conversation.
I totally agree. And so we're going to get to see that trio of safeties that Tom mentioned earlier again as well. Jalen Hawkins, Marte Mapu, and Del Pettis. Those guys are going to be out on the field constantly again. We also have the Tennessee Titans inactives, if you'd like those.
Yeah, let's get those.
Those are
maybe more important.
So... Titans and actives, Ty J. Spears, the running back, Will Levis, of course, Trey Avery and Legarius Sneed, Cedric Gray, Dylan Radens, and David Martin Robinson at tight end. So the big ones there, Legarius Sneed, who you knew was going to be out for this game, their lockdown corner in the offseason they acquired from the Chiefs, and Ty J. Spears, their second running back, will be out, but Tony Pollard is active, is good to go today, so it'll be a backfield of Tony Pollard and Julius Chestnut for the Tennessee
First
Titans.
First of all, Julius Chestnut, A-plus name there.
I couldn't agree more.
Oh my God.
What
a beautiful surname. Tony Pollard, that's going to be tough for you. I think that this run defense, even if he's like a little bit hampered by injury or whatever he's going through, getting banged up, like I just, that's, they, I wasn't won over by the defense last week.
Yeah.
And I want to be. I very much want to be. I just haven't seen them be able to stop somebody who starts picking up momentum and really running downhill.
Yeah, so the good thing, though, is I think Tony Pollard isn't necessarily as your classic downhill runner, mm-hmm. like a guy like Tank Bigsby, who you saw a few weeks ago, who just crushed your soul. So I think you have that going for you in that I don't find Tony Pollard the most difficult matchup for you. But again, having the starting running back of the Tennessee Titans is upsetting because this defense has not been good against the run. And so the more Julius Chestnut I could see, the better off you'd probably be here.
When you hear those inactives, what do you make of the Titans, your expectations for the Titans passing defense? Because of course they're rated as one of the top passing defenses in the entire league. And this is a Patriots team where on the other side, I think it's a little skewed because their passing offense looks dismal for all the weeks that you rode with Jacoby Brissett. And now you're hoping to build something with Drake week to week.
So I want to address those Titans passing numbers because I think they're a little misleading. John Lyons and I talked about this Thursday night before Thursday Night Football, and yards per game wise, yes, the Titans are very, very good, but I think that's a result of a lot of short fields for their opponents because Will Levis, Mason Rudolph have turned the ball over a lot. I mean, you look at Jared Goff had 89 passing yards in a 50-point win for the Lions last week. But passer rating that the Titans are allowing are one of the worst in the league. They're like bottom five.
All right. So, we're going to inflate May's passer rating.
Passers are having success against this team. They're just not acquiring a lot of yards. They're not stat padding, as some would assume, just because teams are probably up a lot early, so they're running the football, and they're getting a lot of short fields, so there's just not a lot of opportunity for yards. So I think this Tennessee Titans defense is very, very gettable. Talk about a team that doesn't get pressure like you. They do not get a lot of pressure at all on the quarterback, which is great for Drake May. He's going to have a lot of time. And then you're missing your best corner in Legere Sneed, mm-hmm. That's something you can attack as well.
Shime, Albert Breer was on Early Edition with Trenny Casey earlier this week, mm-hmm. and he was talking about some of what he's hearing for the Patriots at the trade deadline coming up on Tuesday. I want to get your take on the names that he drops here,
okay,
and what surprises you.
Okay. So, like, I've heard that they've gotten calls and are fielding calls on corners and receivers, and the receiver market, of course, in the NFL has moved a bunch. The names I've heard they've gotten calls on are actually interesting. It's KJ Osborne and it's Tyquan Thornton. And I think the reason why Thornton has some value to teams is because that sort of speed, you mm-hmm. can't coach it, right? So every coach looks at a guy like that and says, I can do something with him. So, like, if you want to add some maturity to the room, maybe a player-for-player swap. You trade Tyquan Thornton to Carolina for Adam Thielen. Like, that could be something you might be able to look at, right? Like, and maybe you send the Panthers a pick on top of that. As for corner, they're obviously not trading Christian Gonzalez. I don't think they want to trade Jonathan Jones, but I think they're open for business on everybody else.
So open for business on everybody else besides Jonathan Jones and Christian Gonzalez. When you hear Adam Thielen coming to the New England Patriots in a player swap, your stomach, your heart, your brain says what?
What on earth are the Carolina Panthers doing? Would be my first thought. There's no world where you're going to get a player swap of Adam Thielen for Tyquan Thornton straight up. Like, you would have to give something else up with Tyquan Thornton because you're basically sending them a bag of footballs. Tyquan Thornton stinks. Adam Thielen actually, when Andy Dalton has been in at quarterback, Adam Thielen's actually been really, really good.
The numbers overall have been very underwhelming. So I think when most people look at that on its face, they go like, ugh, what do we want that vet for?
I would love to have Adam Thielen in the building right now. I think that would be great for this receiver group. Like, it's a guy who's very sure-handed. He's been in the league for years. He's played with a handful of different quarterbacks. He's played alongside guys like Steph Diggs. He's played in Carolina alongside Deontay Johnson or by himself. He's been really good his entire career and almost underrated as such, and he's an awesome red zone target. So I think down inside that red area, it opens it up a little bit for Drake May, gives him a legitimate target. So I would love to have a guy like Adam Thielen in the building. However, I think you would need to give up a little bit more than just Tyquan Thornton in a player swap. I also think the fact that KJ Osborne and Tyquan Thornton's names are the ones Breer is hearing is a line heard directly from somebody in the building of the New England Patriots.
I also saw it as a little bit of a for sale sign.
Yes.
Look, dude, that's the information you're getting.
Yeah, of course. And you run with it.
You report the information that you're getting, but it does seem a little bit like, here's whose names we'd really, really like to be out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then a 2-6 team having just about anybody on the defense up for sale outside of their young second-year corner who's basically still playing like the second half of his rookie season makes sense. They're not all that good. So anybody else is basically up for sale for the right price. Like, you're not going to just trade Keon White for a bag of balls. But, you know, if somebody comes to you with some crazy offer for Kyle Duggar, like if the 49ers come to you with a second and a fourth-round pick for Kyle Duggar.
Do you think Kyle would get that?
Probably with that contract, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, to me,
a second is, it's a Niners second.
Yeah, but
still,
that's the price you set, right? Like, you have to have a price in mind that you don't want to go. I mean, that's, you know, more economics lessons from Scheim here.
Professor Scheim.
Yeah, Professor Scheim. You have to know what the value of Kyle Duggar is to you. You gave him that huge contract. Clearly, to you, Kyle Duggar is of value. And so if you're going to get rid of him, even as a 2-6 team, he's locked up in contract. So you're going to have to get a good draft pick in return in order to give him up, which indicates to me it has to be better than a third. Maybe it's just a straight up second, but in my mind, it would probably be more like a 2 and a 5 is what they would get rid of Duggar for, is just my assumption.
I just wonder if a trade, player for player trade between Adam Thielen and Tyquan Thornton happens, is that just like a tree falling in the woods between the two worst teams in the league?
Yeah, probably. It's just the Panthers are like,
does that even make ESPN? It's just like, look at what
Schefter tweets it.
Look at what those bad teams are doing down there.
Speaking of Schefter tweets, can I go on a quick tangent?
Sure.
Did you see his tweet today about, actually, it might have even been last night, technically,
about Jonnu Smith snitching?
Yes.
Yeah.
What is this? Schefter is a reporter, right? So he tweets out things that happen.
He says, this past summer, Dolphins tight end Jonnu Smith appeared on, quote, the Dive Bar podcast and called Buffalo, quote, the worst place you can be in the world. Smith went on to add, quote, the Buffalo wings ain't even good. They ain't even good. I'm throwing all types of shots at Buffalo. Smith gets to play in front of Buffalo's fans today.
The Adam Schefter Twitter timeline continues to evolve, and it continues to shock
me. He's got to, like, have a buddy attached to that podcast, right? Why else are you throwing that out?
That's a great
there?
Point. I didn't
He's
even think of
that. He's trying to plug the pod for a friend.
Oh, Mego. Good call by you.
I never even thought about it.
I'm curious who runs the Dive Bar podcast.
Otherwise, like, how is he coming across that? No offense to the Dive Bar podcast. I'm sure you do great numbers and you're wonderful, but that just is seemingly so random otherwise, especially with somebody like Jonnu Smith. It's not like it's, I don't know.
And it's not
Tyreek
like some huge
Hill
podcast
it.
Either. It's not like you know, like the Joe Rogan podcast
it's
or
like
Call Me Daddy or something.
Slammed the Boston Celtics podcast from Odyssey.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we're talking about giant
or the Six Rings and Football Things podcast.
Exactly. Or Baseball Isn't Boring.
Exactly. It's some, you know, Joe Schmo podcast from Miami.
I'm sure it's a great podcast.
Yeah, they probably do a great job. They put a lot of hard work into it. I have no doubt. But it's just funny to me that Adam Schefter is tweeting things like this, like really to piss off Buffalo fans. That's all it was. Let's
extremely
get some social reaction
random.
From Buffalo fans this morning.
Extremely random. I love it. All right. Well, when we come back, we will have Coach Wiggy's keys to victory for the Patriots. We're just a little over an hour away from kickoff down in Tennessee. Wow. That's the music. You know what that means? It's time for Wiggy's keys.
All right, Coach.
All right. Should we go with key number one?
Whatever, it's Wiggy. Coach here for you. My three keys to today's game, simple. I want to see this Patriots team get the run game going downhill, get aggressive, control the line of scrimmage.
Okay, so get the run game going. I think that's something that we've all been waiting on since about week two.
Yep, definitely.
When you were saying you're going to be a running team and the strength was going to be behind Ramondre Stevenson. Everybody in the locker room is talking about how Ramondre Stevenson, the field vision he has, the way he breaks contact. He's a big body guy. Like, he's a special back. And then, boom, you get down into this slump where between him and Antonio Gibson, they can't even produce above 60 yards a game,
tough.
And I mean, look, Drake May went out last game, and up until the last 2 minutes of that game, Drake May was still the leading rusher. I'm not kidding. Don't laugh,
no,
Sean. It's not a joke.
It's hilarious,
it's the state
though.
Of the run game.
It's so bad.
What do you do? It's not all the offensive line. A lot of it is the offensive line. There's bad run blocking. But something has just really, the wheels have come off with that run game.
It's funny, though. Like, it's just, you know, quarterbacks in a class of their own that lead the league, lead their team in passing and rushing. It'll be Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Jaden Daniels. Oh, and Drake May. Just toss him in there. It's tough. I mean, you look at a Jets defense that has not been good against the run basically all year. And Ramondre, 20 carries for 48 yards? That's disgust. 2.8 yards a carry?
Look, he's very effective in the red zone. So you can't take away from he got the touchdowns. Good for him. But the production is just not there.
It's not. There's no there's no explosion to the run game at all. You're never going to expect this run game to get like a 10-yard carry randomly, right? And that's kind of what you need. It's just the only person that can do that is Drake because he drops back, he sees the lane, and he takes it. But this running game, and I don't know enough to see if it's the offensive line's fault or if it's Ramondre isn't seeing it properly because I feel like a lot of the times there are holes and he's not hitting them very well. But then a lot of times it's also just not his fault because he's getting hit in the backfield. So I think it might just be a mix of both.
Yeah, I think the answer to that is yes.
Yes, yes.
Overall, all of the above. Yes. All right, let's go to Wiggy's second key.
Number two, you got to protect Drake May if he does play. If Drake May's out there playing, I don't want to see him design runs with the football, but I'd like to see him take advantage of some deep shots, especially off of play action.
Wiggy, first of all, didn't he record this morning?
Yes.
Drake May's playing, babe.
Yeah.
Like, we got that locked down.
He might
that
have been
Greg Hill
hard.
Birthday party has got to be, like, something
legendary.
Well,
Andy was on his way to Basic Brunch this morning. They're doing Basic Brunch at Strega in the North End. So he was probably pre-gaming.
Hey, it's Greg.
He's probably pre-gaming brunch as well. But, yeah, Drake May is, in fact, playing. I don't want to see you rein him in at all. Let the man cook. Let him be Drake. Like, if he's gonna play, let him play. Don't hold him back. If he wants to run a little bit, let him run a little bit. You know, tell him not to go crazy. But, you know, if he's gonna get you 10 yards, go get 10 yards. Move the change. It's fine.
Yeah, I was very happy when we talked to Tommy Curran about a half hour ago to hear him be very much on that side of the street.
Same.
Like, if you're cleared to play and you're healthy, then you should be able to go out and play the style that you want to play.
Yeah.
And I think it goes in line with my frustration with Alex Van Pelt and how he runs the offense overall, which since the very beginning of the season has been exceedingly conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's just frustrating to watch. And the times when you really break out of that is because of Drake May's ability to use his legs. And so I really don't want to see that reined in. And I do think that when you have Vidarian Lowe back out there at left tackle, the line looks different. The line looks better. And I'm very much less fearful of Drake, you know, just the danger of him and even just taking a bunch of sacks back there.
Yeah.
When you get a little bit of consistency with the line, I think Ben Brown at center has been really, really,
really
consistent. And so that stuff matters. You know, with David Andrews going out and Drake May coming in, people just kind of look at it and say, the line sucks, the line sucks, the line sucks. They may have started to at least figure out putting some of these pieces together in a consistent way.
Yeah, I think that's the one part of the protect Drake May that I'm excited to see today is I think the offensive line should have a good day against a team that doesn't get a lot of pressure. The offensive line should look good today against the Tennessee Titans.
All right, let's go to Wiggy's third key.
And number three is get after Tennessee, especially get after them in their passing game. Make it difficult for them, put pressure, bring the heat, blitzes all day long. Those are the three keys to getting a W.
Yeah, so this is a type of game where Bill Belichick in the past would just unlock the zero blitz, and he would just constantly send the house and keep you in play man-to-man and be like, all right, Mason Rudolph, beat me. Mm-hmm. I dare you. And forced Mason Rudolph to make throws and make plays, and he's going to turn it over a couple times. And I'm curious to see how much pressure Jerod Mayo and DeMarcus Covington dial up in this game. I think that is going to matter a lot because, as Tom pointed out, naturally with four down linemen, you just don't get pressure, right? You're just not doing it. You're not able to get after the quarterback. So you need to figure out a different way to do that. And the way you do that is you do what, you know, guys like Todd Bowles and Brian Flores have done remarkably over the years, which is just blitz a lot. Send different guys from different positions out of the slot, the linebackers, the safeties, mix it up. You got to send it from all different angles. And Mason Rudolph will give you one. Like, he'll throw one right to you. You just have to be ready to make the play, and you have to pressure him into it.
I hear that. It's just the further that we get down the depth chart with the Patriots defense, I'm thinking, like, who do you send? You know, Kyle Duggar's not
Marcus
playing.
Marcus Jones off the corner. Like, it's Jonathan Jones.
Little baby Marcus Jones.
creating pressure, right? You don't need to make the sack. It's just create the hurry up Mason Rudolph's timing and force him to make a good throw.
It's going to be the cutest blitz in the entire NFL.
Yes.
Is what
it's
going to
be the most demure blitz you've ever seen in your life.
So demure.
It's so mindful.
Oh, my God. All right. I love that. That's Wiggy's keys to victory. He sends them in.
Does that math make math?
Yes, it does.
But we get them every week at 11:45. When we come back, we'll be just an hour away from kickoff against the Tennessee Titans. Give our overall thoughts on how this matchup is shaking out. And we'll talk to WEEI Afternoon Show host Andy Hart at 12:30.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.